I personally think that food is the gateway to understanding someone else's culture and opening the door to opportunities to get to know them. We talk about some amazing things in today's episode with being of multiple cultural backgrounds, living in the United States, and some of the challenges that we faced, as well as our international trip specifically to Thailand and what it was like for our guests to go to Asia for the very first time and discover this amazing, amazing food-filled country. Let's get started. Welcome, welcome to the Nomadic Foodist Show, a podcast for food-obsessed travelers. My name is Chris, your host, and I help people discover amazing food all around the world. I'm really excited about this interview. I talked to Christopher and Jasmine from their blog, The Praanyos. They travel the world. They are an amazing couple, and we talk about some amazing things. We start off with a little bit of talk about where they live now in Louisville, Kentucky, a place that I really enjoyed and what that is like. We talk about what it's like being of multiple ethnicities growing up in America and how food can kind of open the door to our culture and some of those challenges that we faced growing up. And we also talk about this amazing trip they had to Thailand. We spent a lot of time here just because it was such a long, intense trip. It was their honeymoon. We talk about some of those unique things that they experienced, but as well as tips for first-time travelers and what they can expect when visiting the country. So this episode is filled with lots of fun stories and something that you won't want to miss. So here is my interview with Jasmine and Christopher from thepraanyos.com. Jasmine and Christopher, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know we're really excited to hear about your adventures, your travels. Let's go ahead and start off with an introduction. Tell us about yourself.
Yes, I'll go first. I'm Jasmine Praanyo, born and raised in Kentucky. I have loved to travel pretty much my whole life. I've always been a big eater, big foodie. I'll try anything once, I always say.
Yeah. And my name is Christopher Perano. I have always loved to travel. It's funny though, the food scene didn't really hit me until I met my wife, Jasmine, and she really opened up my eyes to different types of foods from all across the world. And I've always loved to eat, but just trying different things and seeing different types of foods from different cultures, it's been pretty big to me the past 4 or 5 years.
And you guys just recently started a blog, I see, like in 2019. Tell us about how that started. What made you want to share your adventures with everybody?
Yeah, so I'm actually a marketing kind of background, advertising background. So when we were looking for wedding websites to put, you know, our save the date and our RSVPs and the registry and everything, I didn't really love the platforms that were out there. So I decided to just build our own. And I bought the domain, thepraanyos.com, and that was where everybody could go and get information about our wedding day, et cetera. So after the wedding, I didn't want to let it go. I had put all that work into it. And so because we were going to Thailand for our honeymoon, I thought, well, let's just turn it into a food and travel blog and kind of just see what happens. That's how it got started. And really, we just love to tell people about travel. How can they get out of the state, get out of the country on a budget? With a big budget, you know, it's just so exciting to help people get out of their comfort zone. Especially I think here where we live in Kentucky, a lot of people, we know a lot of people that haven't been out of the country. They have sometimes haven't even seen the beach before. So to us, that's pretty mind blowing. But it's so cool to be able to get people excited about it and then have them go and do it and then hear about their experience after.
Absolutely. And you guys are in Louisville, Kentucky. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Actually, Kentucky is surprisingly a really, really fun state. Yeah. I have done too many road trips from where I am in Denver to where my family lives in Virginia. And so it goes right through Kentucky. And we always make sure, my wife and I, we always make sure that we stop in Kentucky for the night. We usually will stop in like Lexington, but we have stayed in Louisville as well. And just for like pretty good food. You have like good bourbons. Of course you have, it's bourbon country.
Oh yeah.
and there's like a fast food place that we really love called Crystal. Which I'm a huge fan of.
I love fast food. That's funny. Same. Yeah? Same.
You guys are Crystal fans?
Oh, I love Crystal, but my go-to is Taco Bell.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, we don't have Crystal over out in Denver. So it's just, yeah. It's very small. And it's kind of dumb. I mean, people know from listening to my show that I just love fast food. I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm a fast food lover. And every single country I go to, I always eat like McDonald's at least once to see what have.
Oh my gosh,
have
differently. Yeah.
Because they have, it's crazy. Like they'll have like some random thing on the menu. Like in France, they have like this fried cheeseburger. It's literally like like a stack of like provolone cheese or mozzarella or something like that. It's really thick, fried, and then you just put it on a bun and you just chow down and get the best cheese pull for that Instagram, I guess. So,
we love doing that. We love to see like the American fast food chains in other countries. Mm-hmm. It's so fun to see what's different, and it always is so different.
Yeah, Jasmine mentioned our honeymoon in Thailand. So actually,
Airport
from Chiang Mai to Krabi, we saw Burger King in the airport. I was like, okay, I love rice and noodles, but a burger sounds so good. So of course we got burger, and they sold Heineken beer at Burger King. So of course we got two big things of Heineken beer with our burger. So yeah, those are the best surprises.
You know, it's really interesting. The parts about travel, I always eat local. I always love all the restaurants, but when I'm gone for like, you know, months at a time, you need a break, you know, like even for a week, because if you're in Thailand, if you are in like India, these really, really spice heavy kind of places, and your palate's just so used to like a different sort of flavors, it can get pretty fatigued. And it's nice having like an American style burger just to even it out.
You miss it. You do. You miss like a little taste of home for sure.
Yeah. And it's actually funny. In Thailand, I had the best fried chicken sandwich ever in Chiang Mai, Thailand. I'm telling you, it destroyed all other like fried chicken sandwiches. And it was at a McDonald's, but it was only in Thailand, and it was a promotional chicken sandwich. It was called the Big Cheese. So it's
that's funny.
Fried chicken thigh with a slice of like some sort of cheese on top, and then like a cheddar cheese sauce. And it was just blew my mind how good it was. And it was spicy and just cheesy. Everything I love.
That's so funny. Chicken thighs don't get the love they deserve.
Right. I agree.
Jeez. Americans just they're in love with the lean meat for some reason.
The white
like
meat.
No.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
No. I don't get it. But hey.
Me
anyways.
Either.
How has the food scene been evolving in Louisville? I've seen that's been kind of growing. I'm not sure what you guys have experienced from living there.
Oh my gosh, it's been amazing. You know, we have so many people that are restaurant owners here and that are from other countries, and they just bring such an amazing twist to local food here. Some of our favorites, La Pana Bakery y Cafe, is like a Mexican pastries. It's just like a little walk-up window. It's so cute. It's so delicious. It's very like authentic Mexican chocolate and the pastry and the way it's made. And then we have some great Cuban restaurants that we love to go to here. But yeah, it's the food scene in Louisville is, I feel like, so underrated. If you live here, you know about it. If you don't live here, it's a very cool surprise.
Yeah, we've had some winners from like chef shows, like Top Chef, and different like competitions on the Food Network that have won and have opened restaurants here. And I think this last year, Apartments.com ranked Louisville as like the number one foodie city the country. So yeah, that was the biggest surprise to me when I first moved here, was the food scene. And it's just anything from like Mexican-American fusion to like Japanese-Mexican fusion. There's all kinds of different twists and different things you can find here.
I guess we should have prefaced this too. So Christopher is actually from near Atlanta, and I'm from Kentucky. So when we met through our family, he was living in Atlanta still. So I actually transplanted him to Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time he came to visit, his mind was blown. He thought he was just gonna see rolling green hills, horses, cows, and I mean, we do have that, of course, it's Kentucky, but you know, Louisville is its own little gem, and it's not a tiny city, so
I think it's the best kept secret in the United States. Hopefully, a lot of people don't visit and move here because it's still, affordable and nice and a really good community. But no, it's the best kept secret for sure.
Yeah, that's the way Denver used to be. My wife grew up in Denver, born and raised, and it has changed immensely ever since, I think, 2014. I think they legalized marijuana in Colorado, and ever since then, everyone has been moving there. And then tech companies started establishing like bases over there, and then goodness, it's just exploding. And now it's like the places that I used to like love to go eat at were really, really inexpensive. And I'd go get this really like the best bowl of pho at this little place in just south of like downtown Denver. And it was, I don't know, $7 for a bowl. Now it's like $13 for a bowl, and everything's just slowly going up in price. So it hurts me. And my wife and I were thinking about like, where do we want to move? Like maybe Kentucky or Tennessee. So we're thinking like, oh, there we
Come on over.
go,
Come on
Louisville.
over.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had my first ever voodoo donut experience in Denver.
Oh, really?
It was amazing.
Oh, goodness. I'm sorry, but Voodoo Donuts does not even scratch the surface of good donuts.
Oh
I'm so, like, it's good,
no. A
but
tourist trap? Did I fall for a tourist trap?
no,
It's the presentation,
it's a
right?
solid donut, okay? It's a great donut. They make wonderful, wonderful donuts there. Don't get me wrong. However, there are some better places for sure. And actually, my favorite place closed down from the pandemic, which was a big bummer. It was called Glazed and Confused. It was just like the
Oh,
best.
that's cool. That's
Yeah.
funny.
Yeah, but there are plenty of other places too to get donuts and baked treats. And yeah, but Voodoo Donuts is good. It's good.
I thought it was pretty
unfortunately,
good.
yeah, it's a good solid donut for sure, especially if it's like a late night out situation. That's always kind of the best because they've strategically put them in places where people like to like hang out and party all night. So you can get your late night donut fix, which is very helpful. But have you guys had like have you guys been to the Brown Hotel and got like the official hot brown like dish before?
I have, Christopher, I don't think you have, right? At the Brown Hotel?
I have not. Nope.
But you've
Okay.
had hot brown.
Yep. I didn't even know what hot brown was until I moved here, so
Yeah.
So a lot of places serve it, and I think they kind of put their own little twist on it. I'll say I'll probably get run out of the town for saying this. I think it's a little overrated.
Well, it's not like super crazy intricate kind of dish, so I understand what you mean.
Yeah, it's good. Like, it's a cool combination. It's definitely worth trying. It's like when you're in the city where something originated, definitely. And we have plenty of those experiences other places, but I don't
Yeah.
know, Christopher, what did you think?
It's a very like American dish, right? You got the
Very heavy
it's technically like what, an open-faced like sandwich, I guess, is the best way
sandwich.
to describe it. Yeah. And just the turkey and the bacon and the sauce, right? So yeah, it's funny though, because like you don't really hear about hot brown so much when you live in Louisville. I feel like it's definitely more heavy on the bourbon side of it. But when people come visit, it's not like, oh, I want to get that hot brown. I guess unless you are a big foodie and you actually know what hot brown is. So
For me, it was very good. I loved it, but it was something that I needed to eat after drinking, I think, because I had, goodness, we were at the Brown Hotel, and this is actually during the pandemic. So I got like the, I think I got a night at the Brown Hotel for like $60 or something,
oh my
like something
gosh, that's
ridiculous.
amazing.
Yeah. So we were driving across country to visit my folks in 2020. And so most of the things were shut down. And I looked, I'm like, I wonder how much it is. Yeah, I got it for like $60. So I'm like, okay, it's a really nice hotel, very fancy, very nice. It's been in movies and stuff like that too. And so I'm like, how do you get a hot brown? So after like two like really good Manhattans, I'm like, okay, I can feel it now. I want this hot brown. And it was very, very satisfying for sure. If there's like one restaurant, if we're gonna go eat out in Louisville, I want both of you guys to give me a different answer. Like, what would be like the one restaurant you take me?
Oh,
Oh, man.
that is so hard. So I feel like we have our little go-tos, but the one that I always recommend because everybody loves it, it's called Havana Rumba. I think the family that owns it, I think they're actually one of them is from Argentina or two. I don't know. It's owned by like a restaurant group that is local to Louisville, but it's a Cuban restaurant and it's it's just the food is always consistently good. You know, the way that they marinate their meats and the lemon and, you know, citrus, pork, things like that. But the drinks are so, so, so good. And they have a man there that plays like the drums, like the bongos. And it's just so fun. It's like an experience and the food is good. The drinks are good. In the summer, they have like an open area where you can sit outside. So I always recommend Havana Rumba because everybody is always like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for that recommendation. It was so good. And I guess we do go, I mean, it's not like our go-to all the time, but I guess we do go there, you know, every now and then for, we were just there for my birthday.
Oh yeah.
Christopher,
what okay, about
so Chris, you put me on the spot. So yeah. I've got like a whole list. I'm going to give you a couple. So
okay
like,
sure, I'll take them.
If we're craving like a good breakfast, a good brunch, my hands down, one of the best brunch places I've ever been to is called Con Huevos, which means with eggs. They have tres leche pancakes there. Chris, I'm telling you, they are the best pancakes you will ever eat. They're so good.
So amazing.
That's like a mix on the Mexican-American brunch breakfast scene. It's so good. They're actually locally owned and they've opened up a restaurant now. They're opening up five now, but locally owned, small family that owns them. They've just grown and grown and grown. So that's been so amazing for them and just the growth they've seen. So that's my brunch spot. Jasmine already gave you kind of a Hispanic answer. So one I'm going to throw at you is called Muscle and Burger Bar. They do a twist on burgers where it's like almost different themed burgers. So like they have like a BBB, which is like a breakfast burger, and it's amazing. And they have like different marmalades and different sauces that you can get. They've got like a sweet potato French fry you can get with like a maple syrup marmalade dipping sauce. It's so good. But they have like an Argentine burger. They have a seafood burger. And that's like when people are coming in town, especially for business, that's my lunch spot or dinner spot. I take them. Very good.
Now you have me hungry.
I know. It's hard. It really is hard. I remember even when we built our website, we had like a whole page just for food because everyone was coming from out of town. I'm actually from Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is about an hour and a half south of Louisville. And we had like three tiers, like pricey, you know, middle range, you know, on the lower end. And it was all local places, all of our favorites. And there were probably like 30 restaurants on that list.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I need to spend some more time and like eat through Louisville.
Yes.
You know, like yeah. After this year, I'm trying to think. I think next year we're going to do maybe one more international stint through like Asia again. It depends on like the international situation though, because with like North Korea and then I don't know, you have China and Russia. It's getting kind of weird over there. So
yeah.
We'll see, but hopefully next year we can go. And then we want to do a good 6 months I'll upfit like a van or something like that to live out of. And we'll go to all these U.S. countries. We did a lot of U.S. road trips. And so we've been to a lot of different states and a lot of different food cities, but mm-hmm. to spend maybe a little more time, we just kind of drove through. We did like these, 2 week at a time, like road trips. We went like up to Maine for fall. And then we've like gone down to like Texas for barbecue and all through like a lot of the American South for barbecue, which was really fun. We've gone out west for, you know, national parks and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think it'd be cool. Louisville would be a really, really good option to kind of hang out and stay. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Right. And let
you
us
gotta
know.
Reach out to us.
Yeah. And I know you guys already kind of mentioned it. Well, let's switch gears here. How did you both kind of grow up? I feel like how we grew up, how our parents brought us up, really affects our outlook on food and travel. So how did it happen for both of you, and how did it affect what you guys love to do now?
Absolutely. So mine's kind of a crazy story. I was adopted by my biological uncle, and he was single at the time. So then it was very hard to adopt children as a single man, but I guess because he is my uncle, it was a little bit easier. And I think selfishly I was going to a daycare center. There were exchange students there, and he noticed them, and he asked the lady that ran the daycare center, was out of her home, you know, how do I sign up for exchange students? So He had two exchange students that he was housing. I was 1 year old, by the way, with another brother who was one because he's my biological cousin. And then my little brother, who was just a few weeks old. So I think my dad was like, I'm in over my head. I'm just going to get some exchange students and they can probably help after school. So funny, because when their year in high school was over, they invited my dad and, you know, us to come and visit their family in Ecuador. So my dad took us to Ecuador, you know, 1 year old. We went to meet their family, and we just kept going back every year to visit their family over and over again. And now they're like family to us. And, you know, even one of the trips, I was 5 years old. We landed super late. We had to go rent a car. And my dad asked the lady at Avis Rent-A-Car out on a date, and they got married 6 months later.
Oh, wow.
So she became my mom. Yeah. So have a little sister, through my mom and dad, after that. So yeah, we've just been going back to Ecuador. I think by the time I was 18, I'd been 20 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Love that family so much though. And it's just so funny that it all came from, two of the cousins of that family were our exchange students for my poor single dad with three kids, you know, in over his head. And they were just grateful to have such a great experience, even with these babies in the house. So it's so funny. But yeah, I was pretty much spent all summers in Ecuador. Christmas, we went for spring break a few times. And yeah, I mean, just getting to live in like a totally different culture, and then coming back home, it's just like, it is culture shock. It really is. It's like a feeling that you can't explain. And I know, you know, the feeling, because you travel for such, you know, long stints of time. But yeah, it was, you know, crazy, crazy story. I mean, like, one thing had to lead to another for me to get here and love travel, and for Ecuador to hold such a permanent place in my heart. But it's like second home to me now.
Yeah, where in Ecuador?
So they're kind of spread out. We have family in Quito, which is the capital, but the family that that came to be exchange students, their main family, the matriarch and the children and the grandchildren, and now even great-grandchildren, there are a couple, live in Santo Domingo. So it's a little bit smaller than the capital. It's more in the mountains. They still have some native Ecuadorian tribes there. We actually got to visit in December of 2018 as a family. And so we did like the native Ecuadorian tribe tour and all sorts of fun things. But we're hoping to go next year with the newest addition of the family so he can,
oh yeah, absolutely,
so he can see everybody. Yeah.
Chris, or how about you?
Yeah, so, you know, you heard I'm from Atlanta, the metro Atlanta area, and, you know, kind of growing up in the 90s, it was all about the new, like, chain restaurants and fast food. So, to be honest, I actually grew up on a lot of that. So, you know, like the Chick-fil-A's, McDonald's, Burger King's, not tons of home-cooked meals, but on special occasions, you know, my family being from all across the country. So, on my dad's side, my dad's actually from Ecuador, too. So anytime I got to go to Ecuador, or we had family in town, you know, we have, like, obviously ceviche is really popular. There's tons of different soups they make. I might be on like a breakfast kick right now, but like bolón verde, I don't know if you've ever had that, or bolón de verde. It's like green. It's almost like plantain, like a ball with like sometimes with cheese in it, and then like an over easy egg or a sunny side up egg. And it's so good. And then on the other side of the family, my grandmother is actually from South Korea. So, you know, growing up, I was lucky enough to have like Kobe ribs and the different types of foods. You know, I mean, that's probably the best like beef ribs I've ever had in my whole life. And then just different soups and stuff. And, you know, growing up, I used to always be like, I don't like steak. I don't like seafood because it's just so fishy and steak's so tough. But when you grow up and you start saying, okay, well, I like fresh seafood and I like steak that's not overcooked because, you know, it's not as tender. My palate started maturing, right? So that's kind of my childhood as far as the food scene goes. And then You know, being with Jasmine, she's the one that really exposed me to just more different foods outside of just the norm. So it was, yeah, it's been good. I'm still catching up, but we've done a lot in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years of exploring on the food scene.
I think too, I really think like whether you're adopted or not, or like how you're brought up, if it's like in your DNA, it's in your DNA. So I'm actually half Mexican, and half Caucasian, and Christopher is part Ecuadorian, part Indian and Caucasian. So I think just like that taste and desire to just try different things, and I think our palate, it's almost like you're almost like born with that palate. Even our son, who now is like a mix of everything, he eats everything. He likes sushi, fish, you know, salty, sweet, whatever vegetable we put on his plate, he eats it. And I don't know, I don't know, maybe I don't know what your ethnic background is, Chris, but I really do think it's a thing. I think it's like almost in our DNA.
Yeah, I'm actually half Korean and half German. So my mom's Korean, my dad's German. So
That's a cool
really,
mix.
yeah, it's an interesting one for sure. So when Christopher, when he mentioned that his grandmother's Korean, so I'm like, oh wow, that's yeah, there you go. Like I get it. He's like, and I was very lucky. My mom had this like enormous garden growing up, so we had a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. My mom made a lot of her own things from scratch, even non-Korean things. Like she would make sheet pan pizza for me after school, you know, she would like cut it
That
up
is so cool.
and then like put in the fridge so after school I could have a snack. And then she'd make her own like dinner rolls that were just absolutely amazing. And then she'd make German food. So she'd make schnitzel and spätzle and her own gravies and all sorts of stuff like that.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So I
I
was
will say, Chris,
spoiled.
my grandmother on the Korean side has opened up Jasmine so much to Korean
Oh,
food. I mean,
yeah.
from sesame
Oh,
leaves to like fish soup, spicy fish soup.
yeah.
I mean, all
She
the little
loves.
Korean sides. I mean, she's in love now.
She loves when we visit because my daughter and I, our oldest, she's 12. We will eat anything. The fishier, the better. The spicier, the better. And so I think she was testing us one of the first times we went to visit. And she made this fish soup. It had like anchovies and like a couple of other kinds of fish. And my daughter and I were both like, "Can we have more? Can we get seconds?" It was so good. She's a hoot. And she tried to send us through the airport with like a whole
Yes.
grocery bag of
Oh,
like food.
that's
I'm
so
like, I
Korean.
don't know. I don't, I know. I was like, I don't think they're gonna let us through with all of
That's
this.
so Korean.
It is so cur She is so funny. I love her so much. She really has. I've always liked Asian food, but I didn't specifically ever have Korean. And in the town that where I was born and raised, they're still kind of behind on the different variety of, you know, international restaurants and the food scene there. But yeah, I when she introduced me to Korean food, I was just, it's like easily one of my top three international foods,
Chris,
has
it
to
was
be.
so bad when she came back. She literally emailed H Mart and was like, we need a H
Oh
Mart
yeah.
in
Yep.
Kentucky area,
Oh yeah.
please. I did that. I did that. I said you need to open an H Mart in Louisville, and it has to be the one with the cafe. It will do well here.
Yeah, the cafes. Oh man. Yeah, we're lucky in Denver. We have two H Marts and we have a little Korean area too. So they have some pretty decent Korean food in Denver now for sure, which I'm very happy about and very lucky to have. It's
Yeah.
yeah, it's funny though. Like my mom too has like tried to send me through the airport security with, you know, little lunch boxes full of like food and like rice balls and all sorts of
So
stuff. It's
funny.
what Koreans do. If you go out
I
anywhere, you
know.
always make food at home and you bring in containers with you and you just have eat outside and like a picnic, you know. We'll go apple picking in Virginia. My mom will, you know, cook like bulgogi and teji bulgogi, bring kimchi and all that sort of stuff. And it's just
So,
how
where is
it
your
is.
family in Virginia? Because that's where Christopher's family is too, his Korean grandmother and his grandfather.
Just south of Richmond, in a place called Chesterfield. Most
Oh.
Koreans are up in like Annandale kind of area. So,
Yeah.
They lived in Fairfax for the longest time, and after retirement, they built a house out in the Shenandoah River National Park area. So they
Oh,
got
that's
away, kind of
beautiful.
front royal. But it's funny, they miss Fairfax is obviously church, and all their friends are there. So they're actually in Africa doing a mission trip right now. But yeah, their front royal was another spot that completely. I mean, growing up, I used to get to go to DC and see them all the time. I love DC. I thought I'd eventually move there, but obviously, you know, it's so expensive. But Front Royal is another good little hidden secret too. So yeah.
Yeah, and I'm actually like the mountain areas in Virginia are just so beautiful, and I didn't get a chance to explore them too much in my adult life, you know. So it's one of the things I really want to do is check out a lot of those areas too. Just the, you know, Rocky, not Rocky Mountain, Appalachian Mountains. Those are just such a beautiful, fun area, and it's just different. The Rocky Mountains are great. I do like the Rocky Mountains, but they're really dry and they're really dusty. So if you go anywhere, there's always like a film of dirt on your car. It's just different. It's nice, clean, crisp mountain air, which is nice. But when you go to like the lower elevation mountains, the autumns are beautiful. There's just a different feel to it. I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain. So I don't know. I kind of miss Virginia and that sort of area a little bit too. Oh,
I
goodness.
love it. I love it. So that's the only Mexican family I have in the United States. They're in Chesterfield.
Oh, no way.
I swear.
That's fun.
Like,
Oh, small
could be
world.
neighbors. I
Yeah,
know. I
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I usually go back once a year to visit my folks. So I'll reach out and be like, "Hey, where's your family? We'll all go hang out." We'll
I
go
know.
hang out.
Let us know. We'll meet you there.
Yeah, it's interesting when you grow up in like a mixed family. It's something that I think I don't want to dive into this too much because it's like a deep conversation that I don't know, the podcast isn't really geared towards. But when you grow up as an American, because I was born in Texas actually, and then we moved to Virginia, and I have two immigrant parents, and it was a kind of like a weird way to kind of grow up, especially in Southern Virginia, where I didn't know there were other Koreans. Like I was maybe one of two, three people like my age that I knew. There was only one other Korean person at my school growing up. And the only other Koreans I saw were at, you know, church, you know, that we went to. And that was it. And then they didn't have other Koreans my age, you know, so I'm like kind of like alone. And then I'm kind of in this weird, I guess, cultural limbo where I don't really identify as Korean, but I don't identify as like a white person either because I don't look white, and then I don't know where I belong. And then you kind of grow up, and then now where people are really hitting hard with like their ethnicity, I'm like, well, I'm kind of like nobody, you know, like I don't really fit in anywhere. It's kind of strange. You know what I'm saying?
I can
Yeah.
totally relate. The town I grew up in at the time, you know, when I was growing up, there were not a lot of Hispanic kids in school, and the ones that were first generation born here, or they weren't born here, and so they were still trying to learn the language, and you knew, like, oh, the handful of Hispanic students, you know, in the elementary school. And so I never identified with them because I thought, well, I speak English, you know, and I do speak Spanish too, but English is my first language, and I don't know, we're just different. And even I think I've been in Louisville for 8 years now, and even when I moved to Louisville, I really was finally like, there are Hispanic people who are, you know, of two different ethnicities that embrace both cultures, or the one that maybe, you know, they've been hurt by before. And so, and I think traveling has made me embrace that even more, you know, seeing how proud other people are about their culture and their upbringing and the country that they live in. So, but I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird thing. When I think back to my childhood and my friends, you know, said like my house smelled weird because it smelled like kimchi and like all these other like weird spices and things, whatever my mom was cooking. And it wasn't uncommon to find, you know, a sink full of squid or some other sort of strange animal that most people weren't used to seeing. And when I ate fish, I was always like whole fish, head, tail, fins on, you know, and
Eyes,
Americans.
everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's just how it always is. And when I went over to my friend's house and they gave me like this fried thing, I thought it was chicken. I'm like, this is fish? Like, what is this? Like, I didn't understand fish sticks. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Where's the rest of the fish? Like, how do you get this fish cube situation going on? So
That is too funny.
yeah, it's a weird thing to kind of grow up in those kind of mixed things. And I don't know, maybe I'll write a book about it one day. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we might be underrepresented sometimes in these conversations, and sometimes we just don't fit in. Because if I go to Korea, I won't fit in with that culture because I'm not really Korean. And Korean culture is really weird in a lot of ways, where it's very, very intense. It's very formal in a lot of ways. Like you have to tell, like call people by their specific titles if they're in your family, from like cousins to aunts to uncles. And if you don't use those titles, it's very insulting. It's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. So with the food, I was thinking about this the other day. Maybe you guys can agree or disagree. It's totally cool. I think food is actually the beginning, not the complete resolution. Okay, don't misunderstand me. That food is the beginning of ending racism. Okay, that's what I think. Oh, yeah. I think it's the easiest way, because racism is about like my race is superior to yours, and there's this weird complex of like, okay, I'm better than you. But when you eat someone's food, you're like, you can taste some culture, you can taste something that you like, and all of a sudden now this person becomes more human to you. It's like, I think that's why I'm like, more people need to travel and eat more food. We'll all be nicer to each other. I'm telling you.
I have always joked, you know, you have different love languages, gift giving, you know, acts of service, whatever, touchy-feely. I have always said, I think most people have in common the love language of food. Of course, like you meet the one person every now and then that doesn't really care about what they're eating, like, oh, whatever, I don't care. But then you have most people like will have a certain craving sometime, or they have their favorite go-tos. And that is like 1,000%. That's my love language. Like any birthdays, holidays, Mother's Day, I don't want flowers. I don't want, if I can't eat it, were you even really thinking about me? I agree though. Yeah. I think there's even just, you know, having the meal together mm-hmm. is, you know, storytelling and talking about, you know, what's in this? How did you make it? Is this what you had growing up? I feel like I have a lot of those like touching moments with Christopher's Korean grandmother when we visit, and how she talks about, you know, my mom used to make this for me every day. And it is a whole experience.
Yeah. It's just a gateway to like the culture. And I think it's really interesting. And I don't know, since we're all kind of like of mixed backgrounds, you know, I faced racism in a certain way. And I think if people had, you know, tried bulgogi, you know, they don't understand Korean food. But once I fed my friends like bulgogi, like, oh, this is really, really good. Bulgogi is just like beef with soy sauce, a little bit of sugar and a little bit of other things in the marinade. But it's just like a beef teriyaki, you know, like most people can understand beef teriyaki in a way. And they mm-hmm. try it and they're like, boom, like, okay. Koreans are a lot less weird now, you know.
Yeah.
That's from a child standpoint. When, you know, my friends would come over to my house, I'd make sure I told my mom, like, make sure we don't serve anything weird, because like, and this is for me as a kid, like, I don't want to be embarrassed because all my friends, you know, are they're white or black, you know, so I don't want them to be weirded out by some weird foods. But when my mom would serve bulgogi, like, oh, this is really good. Okay, I like this. And now these other ethnic people, don't seem as strange to me anymore, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Open the door. I think for sure. I have like a little tiny story to tag along to kind of prove, because I think this really starts like at home. You can't raise your babies even to think that's yucky, don't eat that, you know, unless obviously it's not edible, but if it's something you don't like, just, they can still try it. Maybe they'll like it. But I remember my daughter was maybe 6 or 7 and she was going to summer camp, and I packed her those little seaweed snacks, you know, like the little snack size pack, like 6 little, you know, the crispy salty seaweed.
Yeah.
And she told me when she came home from camp that day, she said, mommy, don't pack me those anymore, okay, if you don't mind. It's like, why? Oh. You love those, you love them. And she said that somebody at her table at lunch was making fun of her.
Oh.
And it broke my heart. It like sent me into like a whole nother motherly dimension. So I wrote an email to them, and I just said, you know, this is a learning opportunity. Maybe you all can do some kind of like international food seminar or something for these kids. You know, it's crazy, but I'll never forget that for as long as I'm alive. That's just, you know, we can't make our kids think that it's okay to look differently at other people's food choices, you know?
Yeah. It's strange too. I'm actually getting a little emotional just hearing that story, because I can relate as a kid, totally, like getting picked on because I had to tell my mom, like, don't give me chopsticks anymore, you know, my lunch, because, you know, all my friends use forks, you know?
And so
and then like, you know, you can't pack me weird Korean food. Don't pack me kimchi at all, because it smells really bad, especially people who don't used to it. So like, don't pack me kimchi. You know, I totally get that. Oh man, that's why. Yeah, start off kids young, to understanding that and trying those foods. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's
And I think that's why travel is so important too. You know, it really goes hand in hand, food and travel.
Well, you just mentioned too, before we start the call, that you're going to Costa Rica and you're bringing, you know, he's a 21-month-year-old kid, you know, 21-month-old kid. Oh, it's crazy.
Yes, lucky him. Young. Yeah, I think he was only like 2 months old when we took him to Walgreens to get his passport photo taken.
All right.
That was the hardest part of the whole passport experience, was getting him to just not move his head for that one second. But he's already on eight
plane rides too, so he's getting up there. So yeah.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. You know, my wife and I are waiting to have kids a little bit, and like, when we have kids, are we gonna like not travel anymore? And we're like, I don't know. And we're talking about it and trying to figure out if our, you know, kids will do well on flights, and I guess we'll have to figure out then. But kids can do pretty good on flights. That's good.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I will say our blogging part of our website has taken a little bit of a backseat, especially when COVID happened. We had to cancel a whole year's worth of trips. I mean, we had so many fun things planned for 2020. Then we actually found out we were expecting right in the, you know, in the beginning of COVID. It was a bit of a surprise, but we were planning, you know, down the road, but life had earlier plans for us. And so I think what I would love to do is kind of start blogging more about how it's okay if you travel with your kids. Here are some things that you can do to make it easier. And there are just so many resources out there in the airports and all around. I mean, people are carrying car seats in their, you know, taxis and Ubers. And like our driver next week when we go to Costa Rica, he's like, if you guys don't want to bring a car seat, I have a car seat. So it's just really cool to see how easy it is to find accommodations. All of the places we're staying in Costa Rica have their own pack and play, so we just have to bring sheets. So I mean, it's, will it be as fun? I don't know. It's, that's kind of, you know, dependent on what the certain person defines as fun. But I love to see just like the magic in our kids' eyes when they visit a new place. And I'm so excited to see him running all over the place in Costa Rica.
Yeah. Everyone's different, but did you guys have like some sort of aha travel moment where there's a trip, maybe a meal, even a culmination of specific things where it all came to a head where you knew that you wanted food and travel to be in your life forever?
I think I've had a lot of aha moments, period. Like just anytime, any new place. Thailand, I think I had so many of them. But I think because I visited Ecuador so much growing up, I longed to travel more and more. And growing up, especially, it's not your money, it's not your time. You know, your parents are planning everything. So Ecuador it was, that's where our friends and family were. And I loved going. Now that I'm older, I don't, you know, we travel on our own time and dime. I'm not a big fan of double dipping. So I don't like to go somewhere twice just because life is short. I want to go everywhere. I want to visit every place on the planet. And I'm not even kidding. So I don't know. I don't know that I ever had an aha moment, but I knew when I was on that plane leaving Quito to come back to the United States, it was at least an hour of waterworks because I didn't want to come home.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, I wasn't ready for it to be over. And you know, we would get home and then I would just really look forward to the next time that we got to go. And now that's kind of how we are. We're like, okay, let's work hard and look forward to that next trip that we have planned. And then after that, we'll have our next trip and then our next trip. And I don't know. I think it's like a lifestyle, but that's our thing. You know, we're not big shoppers or anything. That's just, we like to spend our money on travel.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about the experiences for sure. My answer is kind of similar. I going to Ecuador so much as a kid and teenager and obviously a young adult. And now that was the place, you know, as a teenager, I was like, I want to move to Ecuador one day. This is going to be my new home eventually. But the thing that kind of broke my heart is, you know, a lot of countries want to become like the United States and more West, you know, that West kind of side of the world living. So like TGI Fridays and Starbucks and things are popping up. So Ecuador kind of lost a little bit of me with that progression in the kind of the culture. But I mean, honestly, Thailand was a place that completely blew my mind in the right way, where, you know, in Ecuador, you can't go and eat everything you see on the street. You know, you'll get sick. And in Thailand, I was very cautious for like the first few days, but everything we had at every food market over that, you know, hot gas flame or a charcoal flame was so fresh and so good. I mean, the food from things we couldn't even pronounce, we had no idea what we were eating, to like the fishiest, the squirmiest, the driest different things we had. Everything was amazing. Everything was so good. And I tell people all the time, if I could move to Thailand and live there, I would do it in a heartbeat. It was just, the people were amazing. The food was amazing. Obviously the cost of living is very doable. The whole experience was great, but the food was really my, like, I never realized how much I would love the food in Thailand until we went there. We actually did like a very late decision was we did a cooking class in Thailand, and I'm not a chef or cook by any means. My meals are very simple, but we did this cooking class in Thailand. And it really opened up my eyes, and just how, not easy, but how much, you know, flavor and spice and like love and care really goes into their meals. So that was my aha moment.
I really want to talk about your Thailand trip, but we're going to get to that here in a second. Okay. I have a lot of questions because I love Thailand, and it was my first like big trip that my wife and I did together, and Thailand was the first spot. So it was amazing. We'll definitely talk about that. But one thing I really want to know is, why did you guys start your travel blog, as far as like, what do you want to accomplish with it? Just because, people like us who love food and travel, we want to share these things with the world, but we all have our different reasons. So what is your why for starting this travel blog and sharing your food and adventures with the world?
I think, you know, beyond the, I want to have a great like little online diary. If I can convince one person that's never left the country to leave the country, then it's worth it for me. Even if I write this blog for 20 years and then that happens, it's worth it to me, because I know that it can be scary for people that have never been out of the country. And I know for us, it's not, because we started international travel at such a young age. But if we can get more people to get out of their comfort zones and just see that the world is so much bigger than Kentucky, than America, you know, the United States, there's so much magic out there. It's so hard to even explain, you know, it's really hard to put into words the magic that you feel when you're the minority in a town and, you know, you're surrounded by this history and culture that you don't know a lot about. It's just such like so many emotions, so many amazing feelings. And it's like, you want everybody to experience that, you know, especially adults that haven't left the country yet. Haven't had that opportunity. And I think a lot of people don't know. And that I think what I love about our blog is that it's so genuine and raw. You know, we're not trying to look like this glamorous couple in these, you know, resorts, going on these retreats. We are staying in all sorts of different kinds of places. You know, I have my little $10 fanny pack, you know, hands-free. I want to get in there and do everything, you know? So, I wouldn't say we're like super budget travelers, but we do try to help people see that you can find cool resources to find cheap flights, cheaper places to stay. You don't have to have a ton of money to travel internationally. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is that you have to be wealthy, you know, to travel internationally. So if we can just kind of answer some questions to get people closer to making the leap of making their first international trip, I think it's amazing. And we have had several people reach out to us with questions, and I love it. I love it when people reach out.
Yeah, I mean, very similar answer. I think one thing, especially because Ecuador has a special place in my heart, you know, in the Western culture, there's a lot of news, right? So like the CNN and Fox, like oh, South America, there's a huge rebellion, or I remember when Zika was a huge thing, and it just, you thought the whole continent of South America had Zika, and or was, you know, everyone lived in huts and there was no running water or electricity. And it's just, I think breaking that idea and telling people it's okay to go to different countries across the world and step out of your comfort zone, instead of having this like just one mindset, you know, in your head where it's like you can't go there, you'll get sick, you know, you'll something bad's gonna happen, you'll get robbed or someone will kidnap you. I think it's just breaking that idea that people have in their mind.
I agree. I think a lot of people here in the States are afraid to leave the country because they think that, you know, this country's that way or the crime rate or this or that. And I think the truth is there are good people everywhere and there are bad people everywhere. And, you know, obviously there are definitely pockets of certain places in certain countries where, yes, if you're a tourist, maybe not as safe, but we have unsafe places in our backyard here in Louisville, you know? So it's, I think that's definitely a huge stigma that, you know, if we can help be a small part of breaking, then I'm happy with that.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. I mean, if you think about the people who influenced you, like for me, a big one, I think for a lot of travelers now is Anthony Bourdain, right? When you watched
Oh, yeah.
any of his shows, it was a unique experience just because he was such a different type of traveler. You know, he was kind of like the bad boy foodie travel guide, you know, who used foul language and drank a lot on camera. And that for me was a really interesting take on it. But I still remember actually, so like when I fell in love with food and travel was my first trip to Spain. And I picked Spain for one reason. I watched Anthony Bourdain, and anyone here can Google this, just go on YouTube and put in there Anthony Bourdain, no reservation, Spain. And someone has some sort of like bootleg copy up there. And you just, the opening scene, Anthony Bourdain is getting into a van with his camera crew and everybody in there. And he said, "No one in the history of the world has eaten as well as we have on this trip." I'm like, okay, he's in Spain. That's where I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And it was this crazy eye-opening experience, you know. And I will, don't know what I would have done if he didn't do those things. And if he never said that, I wouldn't have gone to Spain. Seriously, I probably would have gone
Yeah.
to, I don't know, Rome or something like that. And as my first trip. And then I just fell in love with food in Spain. So it's just this
Was there
crazy
a
thing.
specific dish in Spain that you had that you enjoyed or
Yeah.
city that you enjoyed?
Went to Barcelona and it was at the La Boqueria market, and it's the biggest market in Spain. So beautiful, wonderful market, lots of colors, lots of delicious, delicious things there. But I went to this food stall called El Quim. And they basically serve everything with like this Spanish olive oil, drenched egg. Really, really cool. So it's how they fry the egg and like they just crack it in this really, really hot smoking olive oil. It kind of like starts to bubble up and the whites get really nice and puffy. And they kind of baste it with the olive oil too. And so the yolk is still running, but the whites are like really light and really airy. So it's really, really cool. So I got this dish of sauteed mushrooms and a slice of foie gras on top, and then they put the egg on top of that, and it looked really disgusting. So I had never had foie before, and I saw the menu. I'm like, oh, I'll be fancy, so I'll order this foie gras. I can't even say it right.
It's still on my list of things to try. It looks amazing and sounds amazing. I don't know. The opportunity has never presented itself, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance either until then, you know. So I'm like, okay, we'll try it. And it
Yeah.
looked really bad. And I took a bite and it was wonderful. It was like one of the best, it was at that point the best thing I'd ever eaten in my entire life, where I had no idea what to expect. And it was so outrageously good. And the crazy part is, so my wife and I decided to elope in Spain. So went to Barcelona and years later, I think it was like six, seven, eight years later, after I had it the first time, we went there and I had the dish again. It was just as good as I
That's
remembered.
so cool.
That's
That is
impressive,
so
yeah.
cool.
Oh, and if you actually want to see what the dish looks like, this is a crazy part too. It's like validation of my taste buds. So Phil Rosenthal goes to Barcelona.
I love him so much. I know he's like hit or miss with people. I love him
I love
so
them.
freaking
Yeah.
much.
I think it's on Somebody Feed Phil, the one on Netflix, or he did one on like PBS that was called I'll Have What Phil's Having. I think it's Somebody Feed Phil. He goes to Barcelona, and then he goes to El Quim in the La Boqueria market and gets the exact same dish. And he loved it. I'm like, oh, yes.
Isn't that so cool?
It's a weird travel through time situation. It was fun.
I'm so jealous because I've been to Barcelona twice and I've been to that market, and you're right, the colors and the food, and just like you walk in, you see like these meats and legs like all over you. Like it's crazy. I've never even heard about dish. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's been a list now.
Well, hey, the ham on is something to die for. Goodness, it's like ham on Ibérico, and then the black hoofed pig. Cured for 3 years and just this buttery melt in your mouth, nutty ham. It's like the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That and the wine, right? That and the wine. It's like the only wine I drink. So.
Yeah. Oh well, it's crazy. I love going to Spain and getting cava. It's like their champagne. You know, it's their sparkling wine native to Spain, and it's just I love drinking it so much because. It's really inexpensive and it's just delicious too. You can just have, I saw an old lady at 6 o'clock in the morning at the La Boqueria market at some food stall drinking cava with her breakfast. So I'm like, all right, I'm in the right place.
It's a secret. That's the secret to a good, long, successful life.
Yes. That's 6 a.m. cava.
She just left the club probably, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, man. That was another thing about Barcelona. Me and my dad were getting on the train to go to the airport like at 5:45, 6 o'clock, and you see those girls holding their heels.
Yep.
The guys coming. That was a mind-opening thing too. So
have you guys ever done that before? Like stayed out all night until the sun came up?
Oh my God. I think that's also, I think if you're Hispanic, that's also in your DNA.
Yeah, my wife's Hispanic, and so she has some funny stories about her parents like going out or like doing those sort of things where you bring your kids along and it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, the family's still dancing or having fun. You're just kind of sitting in a chair by yourself, like sleeping.
You're sleeping in the guest room. Yeah.
I've seen little small mattresses in the back of pickup trucks in Ecuador at a party.
It's so funny because we take our kids everywhere too. I mean, we travel with them. I don't know if it's a Hispanic thing or what, but they're always with us.
So
this is a family thing. We're just doing it.
Yeah. Chris, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Louisville's dangerous because they'll stay out. The bars and clubs don't close till 4 a.m.
What? I did not know that.
So that was one of the things that shocked me because, like, you know, you go out to 4 a.m., which it's way too late. You don't even realize what time it is. And then you go get breakfast, you know, like
a little after.
I remember telling, I was like, babe, is that the sun coming up? And it's like, it's like 6:30. Like, what? Like, it's crazy. So.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's why those diners, like mine, my favorite is Waffle House. You know, Waffle House. And actually, speaking of which, my favorite scene of anything Anthony Bourdain has ever done is when he was in Charleston, South Carolina, and he had Waffle House for the first time and with Sean Brock, the chef of the South. So,
oh my gosh, that's crazy. He had never
had Waffle House before. And wow. It is one of my favorite scenes of food because like it just shows that good food is good food. No matter if it's cheap, no matter if it's a chain, no matter who's like cooking it necessarily. You don't have to be a famous, experienced, Michelin-starred chef in order to make something really, really good that satisfies your needs and your cravings. It's just a Waffle House. And he has an amazing time eating at Waffle House. So and that's somewhere on YouTube too. So you guys can, or anyone else listening, if you haven't seen it before, it's amazing.
I love Waffle House. And my mom and I would go there at the church and she would actually get pecan waffles. So I just Googled Waffle House. And that was actually one of the things he had was pecan waffle.
Yes. Pecan waffle. I'm telling you, people don't get it. And I have to get a Waffle House a couple times a year. Just, I have to, it's just the best.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You got to get your fix. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well here, let's switch gears. I'd love to hear about Thailand and
oh my gosh.
What was it like? Was it your first time over in Asia?
That was both of our first times in Asia. Yeah. So I don't know why my whole life I wanted to honeymoon in Asia. I didn't specifically know where. I've always loved Asian food. I've been intrigued with the culture. So Christopher is more, he was more leaning towards like Turkey, Dubai. He likes like the history and the architecture. I'm more of like, give me all the wild animals. I want the beach. I want the jungle. And so we were kind of torn between Thailand and Bali, and we didn't want to do both because we didn't want to be traveling too much while we were traveling. So Thailand was like what we went with because we thought, okay, if we want to do like a nice resort, we can do that one day in Bali, you know, but not now. We want to kind of adventure. This is a once in a lifetime thing. You don't have your honeymoon all the time, you know?
Exactly.
So we decided on Thailand, and I will be so honest when I say I'm not a planner, but I was planning most of the wedding because I am a little bit of a control freak. So Christopher actually planned our entire honeymoon by himself.
All right. Yeah. Was he successful? Yeah. Did he do a good job?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
The only change we did is we stayed in PV Island longer than we were supposed to because we just loved it so much. It was like towards the end of our trip, so it was nice to just like relax after literally backpacking all around Thailand.
Yeah,
how long was the whole trip first, so we know kind of like time frame?
So we were there for 10 days and we traveled for two. So it took about 25 hours to get there and same amount of time to get home.
Okay. And what was like your first impressions? Like, where'd you guys land and what'd you guys think?
So don't forget Shanghai, babe, because that was a big part of the whole honeymoon, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. So I forgot what happened. So, yeah, we got to Shanghai, China, obviously. And
we had a layover that was too long, essentially.
Oh, okay. I guess
we must have missed our next flight or something, but everybody on our flight got put in a hotel in Shanghai, and we were standing in line. Nobody knew what was happening. There weren't that many. I don't think there were any Americans, maybe a couple of other Americans on our flight. So we were just kind of in line with everyone else. Like, what are we doing? What's happening? And we were in line to get cash, like Chinese cash. And so we basically all shuttled to a hotel with our cash, and they said, okay, you're going to be on this flight to Bangkok tomorrow, so you have like the whole day. And thankfully we didn't check any bags. We both took a backpack. We didn't want to risk. I mean, that's literally why we just took two backpacks. We didn't want to have to chase down any luggage. It was our honeymoon. Like, the less amount of stress, the better. So we got to spend a whole bonus day in Shanghai, which was so fun. It was pretty fun. That I totally forgot about that until you just said that. That's crazy.
What was the highlight of Shanghai? Like, what's one thing that you guys did there that just stood out to you?
We got into a taxi or like a little bus, and the internet wasn't working very well there. I mean, we really couldn't even get on Google. I don't know if I can say that or not, but so I somehow managed to translate to this man, hey, we just want to go about 15 minutes away. We want to just kind of see some area. We're not from here, obviously, but we want to just experience the culture. And he just kind of nodded and started driving. 30 minutes later, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he didn't understand me or something. I don't know. Like, this is more than 15 minutes. But we show up at this market in the middle of nowhere, Shanghai. So cute. We're the only tourists there. And it's like a giant, what would you call it? Like a farmer's market, Christopher. It was like people selling things. People lived there. There was a river. There were restaurants. It was
a mix of like shops and like open farmer's market. So like you had like the actual like brick and mortar like stores, but then you also had people like in the streets like selling stuff. But nice. It was also like a business day, right? So it was like a probably like a Tuesday or Wednesday. So like you had people that were working that would come there for lunch, and then just people just about their day. But that was crazy. And then next to our hotel, we walked to a mall, which, you know, it's not like a fancy American mall, but it was still a mall with like three or four stories and a couple cafes and restaurants. There was a soup there that Jasmine absolutely loved. And I was just like all the different fonts and branding, because my wife's in marketing, has instilled this in my head. So like all the different logos, like the Red Bull logo was different. The Monster logo was different. The colors were different. It kind of goes back to you know, we talked about the CNN and Fox to kind of like, you know, make you think a certain way. But here we are in China, which obviously everyone knows is a communist country. And it was a highlight of our trip. It was cool because we got to explore. We had no plans. We just jumped on a taxi, went around. We had a bunch of money that we had to spend or else we had to like lose it on the conversion rate. So, you know, we're drinking Chinese beer, eating Chinese food.
Yeah.
And the Shanghai airport was phenomenal. I guess Shanghai's a
so
huge...
clean and like so modern. It was crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I guess it's a huge like business hub.
Yeah, yeah.
So the airport is top. I mean, it's probably one of the nicest airports I've ever been to, just as far as like clean and well, like easy to get around, and all the restaurants and staff were great. But I remember, you know, we were just killing time and I was like, babe, we got to use this money. And, you know, four or five, you know, Chinese beers later at a restaurant, just trying to tip people and get rid of the money. Mm-hmm. It was funny, but yeah, it was great. It was really good.
Yeah, it was great though. So we did end up, you know, on our flight the next evening to Bangkok. So we got there we got to Thailand one day late, no big deal. And we did get to explore Bangkok a little bit. We did a lot of research and we were told like, don't spend too much time there, especially if you're not really there to party or do any, you know, business related things. But we stayed in a really cool hotel and I guess they're well known because they're Muslim friendly. But it was gorgeous. It has like the typical like Muslim arches and it's
called
it's
the
so
Almeraz, Meroz, but mm-hmm. just like the architecture alone and the staff and the service was, I mean, here we are like with our 2 foot bags, like my dad Columbia sandals on.
Yeah, it felt so underdressed. I think that's when we knew like, oh, okay, like the American dollar goes a long way here because it's like the rate that we would pay for any basic hotel, but it was like luxury, you know?
Yeah.
And then yes, of course, the rest of the trip we knew, wow, Thailand is so cheap. I mean, you know, we got massages every day for like $5 an hour, and but you know, we did get to explore Bangkok a little bit. We did the reclining Buddha, we went to some other temples, and we kind of just asked around, you know, what can we go and see. I know they have a mall, the Terminal 21 in Bangkok is pretty popular. It was so much fun. I was like, a mall, are you serious? And it was so much fun.
No, it was crazy. Like the food. Did you guys eat there?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Like I'll like the best like stewed pig's foot I had was in that mall, like over Chiang Mai and over anywhere else. I know it sounds weird, like yeah, the best pig's foot I had, but no, it's delicious. Anyone who's listening, don't judge me on the pig's feet.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because any mall we went to in Asia, you know, in China and Thailand, they take the food court like very seriously. It's you know, I won't knock any of the restaurants we have at our malls here, but it's like an actual restaurant. Like you would actually go there on your lunch break from work and have like a decent meal. So good.
So good, yeah.
But
okay,
yeah. So we went to, So
Bangkok was only 2 days there when we first got there. So we just got. I was like, let's get there. Let's get settled.
We went out a little bit. I mean, you know, we went to a couple of like. Didn't we go to a Harley Davidson bar?
All right, like, that's fun.
Yeah,
we got there and we're like, this is so crazy.
Like, where am I right now? Like, it's not like you get in a bizarre place. Like, what is this? This is awesome.
Yeah, I think they even serve pizza too. Yeah, so like it was like nice nightclub, Harley Davidson
bar.
Yeah.
But that's where we went to grab some beers because we were so jet lagged at that point. Like we were so tired from traveling, but we didn't want to sleep the whole time. We were committed, you know, we're here, we're gonna, you know, sleep when it's time to sleep, be awake when everyone's awake. So you know, we had some super cheap, amazing beers. And yeah, when we were ready to go to Chiang Mai, we did fly. So we went to a smaller, it wasn't the same airport, or was it? Was it the same airport, Christopher? It wasn't the big one in Bangkok. I think it was a smaller one.
No. So yeah, it was the Bangkok airport that we flew from there to
Chiang Mai.
Yep.
Yeah. Super easy flight. For not having anyone there that speaks English really, it was so easy to navigate. And we did try to cram like your basic you know, hello, how are you? How much does this cost? Yes, no, where's the bathroom? And I feel like we did a pretty good job with that because people would try to continue the conversation and we're like, oh, no, that's all we know. But it was really easy to navigate even when we got to Chiang Mai and we're really the only American people there, you know, that we could see. But it's such a beautiful place. You know, that's where we got to go see the elephants. We got to go to this bar where a ton of European expats are. And it's just such a fun little town. We got to walk everywhere. I mean, we would look up a breakfast place, 10-minute yeah. walk. Okay, let's go there. Or, you know, where can we get a, you know, mango and sticky rice? Okay, 10 that's minutes, right. Let's walk there. So that's probably for both of us, one of our favorite parts of traveling is just getting to walk and like really soak in everything because you're not in a moving vehicle. You're like, you're having to see everything around you.
Yeah. Chiang Mai was, yeah, like it was such a great place. Like when we went to, Chris, mm-hmm. what were you saying? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Hey, you're fine. So it's Chiang Mai too. It was the first place Jasmine ever had like an actual like British breakfast with like beans. And
yeah.
Wow.
So we went to like an international like breakfast cafe and it was so good. But yeah, she ordered that, which was surprising because, you know, like we were just tired of eating rice for breakfast. So like, let's try something different. So that's how we got to that spot. And then we did the cooking class, which was amazing. Chef, I think her name was Yui. She actually had done something with Gordon Ramsay when he first came to Thailand. So that was cool. And then we made, what did we make? We made
curry. We made pad thai, mango sticky rice.
We made red and green curry. Yeah, mango mm-hmm. sticky rice. And
it was so fun. And I'm very like, I like to go. So the thought of doing a 4-hour class to me, I was like, I don't know. Am I actually going to have a good time? It was so much fun. It was so fun. Yeah. There were, I think, like 3 other couples there. Mm-hmm. 2 were from England, I think, and
UK. And I think one was from England and the other one was from Scotland, I'm pretty sure.
And then there was a guy from Spain. But yeah, it's just fun like to remember those things and like, you know, be with other people who are traveling and little cooking tips that we definitely brought home with us. Definitely recommend the cooking class in Thailand if anybody goes.
Chris, did you have the khao soi in Chiang Mai or no?
Oh, I did. It's one of the best things, top thing, 10 things I've ever eaten in my life is khao soi in Chiang Mai. I can't remember exactly which one I went.
I would never think coconut and curry together would be so good. And it's amazing. Yeah, so good.
It is beyond like anything I've had before, especially at that time. And I got this chicken one and it just had this really great, strong chicken flavor. Mm-hmm. Like one of my favorite flavors in the world is actually chicken fat. And you can just taste that chicken fat in there. And it was just like, what? And then there's like the noodles and then there's like those crunchy like noodles on top. And then you can add a few other things in there. It's just, oh my goodness. Yeah. So delicious.
Yeah, it was so good. And actually when we came back home, we have a restaurant down the street from our house called Simply Thai and they have it on the menu and we got mm-hmm. it and it was actually pretty good.
It's not bad. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
And kind of like the soups, you know, you talk about kind of like your Korean background a little bit, and I keep bringing Ecuador, but like, you know, when you have soups like the whole chicken mm-hmm. leg or like, you know, not just like the white meat.
Yeah.
You know, I told Jasmine, I was like, you know, Thailand reminds me of like an Asian twist of like Ecuador, but you know, back a couple decades. So, which was nice, which is the part I loved about Ecuador, you mm-hmm. know, not a lot of technology. The people are so friendly, it's safe. You can get around pretty easily anywhere. So, yeah, I think the food, the cooking class, but the elephant sanctuary was
oh my gosh, so fun.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, we did the elephant sanctuary too. It's just fun to hang out with elephants and just
I know.
Just like feed them, just hang out with them all day, you know?
Literally,
you're just kind of
like,
hanging out.
Yeah, like putting your arms around them, giving them a back scratch. They're just such gentle giants. It's I cried. I was so happy.
I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did. It was I mean, that's probably one of the highlights too, just sitting here next to this, you know, huge animal. And you're just petting it, feeding it, giving it a bath, playing in the mud with it. It was crazy.
We loved it so much. We have like a new, like special place in our hearts for elephants. Our son's nursery has a lot of elephants aww. In it.
Yeah. Well, they were just super quiet. Like one snuck up on me. Like how does this enormous animal just sneak up on you? Cause I was just on this trail. We're walking up this trail and I was just taking some pictures with my camera of like the other elephants in front. And the one, you know, came up behind me, and the guy, one of the guys, was like, hey, hurry, move out of the way. The elephant's coming. I'm back. I'm like, it's like right there. I'm like, oh, goodness. Yeah. Okay. I see how it
is. That is so funny. Yeah. I think we were the only Americans on that tour too. There were a lot of, there was like a big group of Ukrainians and also Italians. Yeah. So it's really fun to just, and I think like only one person in that group spoke English besides us. So it's just so fun to see, like, you know, these people came from far away. We came from far away. We're all here to like experience this culture together. I don't know. There's something really neat about, you know, kind of being like the minority in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. And where'd you guys go after Chiang Mai?
So Chiang Mai, we flew to Krabi, and we were there just for a night. And the next morning, we took the ferry to PP Island, and that was part of me. This was a little nerve wracking because I'm very much like, I want to have the confirmations and everything planned. Yeah. Oh. I kept reading like, buy your ferry tickets when you get there, cause it's so much cheaper and it's like more reliable. So we got to Krabi super late, got to the hotel, threw everything in there. And I was like, we got to go find this ferry person where we buy tickets. And luckily we went to the boat ramp and found the ferry ticket person.
There was one lady. Yeah, there was one lady, and she was about to close. And we're like, we just need two tickets. We need to get out of here.
It was like a scene from The Amazing Race, you know?
Yeah, just run and go.
It really was. It really was. But yeah, and PP Island is the best water I've ever seen in my life. I mean, we kayaked so far from the beach, and it was still crystal clear, and it was still pretty shallow. So it's like this giant just area of like green, and you can see like the rock formation. I mean, it's just like those computer backgrounds, you know. There's like that one famous picture from, I think, I don't know where in Thailand, but it's like a screensaver photo, and it's literally exactly like that in real life.
It's like one of the long boats and then just the background of a cove. Yeah, it was beautiful. And so we stayed at a nicer hotel for this one because I was like, let's splurge a little bit because we'll be so tired. We just got married. We just flew. We've been running around Thailand. Let's get to like a nice, like, it wasn't a resort, but it was a nice hotel. Mm-hmm. So literally we wake up and you look out the window. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Water. We had breakfast and it was like the water is right there. We had our own little private pool. It was amazing. So amazing.
And it's fun because you can just walk the whole island.
There's no cars. It's only bikes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's so fun. We did do like a boat tour with other people, and it wasn't pricey. Nothing in Thailand was pricey, but it was like one of the pricier excursions we did. But then we kind of asked around and we said, you know, how much would it cost to just do our own, like have our own longboat and captain, and like, can they take us around? And it wasn't that much different. I was like, oh my gosh, let's do that next. So we did that and we went snorkeling. It was my first time snorkeling. But I was obsessed with the monkeys. My husband was like, please stop touching them. You're going to get rabies.
Yeah.
On our blog, even there's like pictures of them on my arm, and one of them started like rubbing my hand. I think they were looking for ticks, like the way that they were kind of searching around. Yeah. It was so cute. But we ended up, these, you know, people in Thailand are always trying to make extra cash here and there. So these guys were like, do you guys want to rent our kayaks? I said, heck yeah. I think it was like $6 an hour, something crazy. And we had seen this map in our hotel lobby, and it said like Monkey Island, and it was it was like connected to where we were. We just had to like get in the kayak and kind of go around, you know, this little rock formation. And we did. And there it was, Monkey Island. I think it was a 20-minute kayak ride, and it covered in monkeys. It was like heaven. But they ended up
heaven.
It was amazing. Like, this must be heaven.
Yeah.
We did pack a little, you know, some cocktails for the ride, and a monkey came onto our kayak and stole it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Such nuisance.
I was like,
guys. Yeah.
They had like park rangers who would like guard the kayaks because they would, anything plastic, any kind of wrapper, any kind of book bag, they would just take.
Yeah.
And they were literally switching, and he popped that lid off so quick and chugged it and slammed the bottle down. I was
it
like,
was like
what?
A cartoon. Yeah.
Just drink your cocktail. Hopefully
please.
He's all
I
right.
Told Jasmine, I was like, I guarantee that monkey has had worse things than all
yeah,
oh my gosh. PETA, please don't come after
oh,
us. It
man.
Seriously
it
was
happens.
An accident.
Yeah.
It was amazing though. I think hindsight, and we absolutely want to go back, and we want to go back with both kids. I think we will island hop a little bit. I think we would like to see some of the other islands and spend a little bit more time on the coast.
Yeah. Well,
it
like,
was amazing.
Yeah, we went to two different islands. So we actually went to Koh Tao and then Koh Phangan and this other one. And we went to an area called Salad Beach. Terrible name. Not sure why they call it Salad Beach. But it was in this beautiful cove. Just the most like iconic sunsets I've ever seen. I have a picture of like the sunset and it's like this beautiful, amazing purple, like no filter, like no changing anything. It's just this amazing purple, just like how it was the entire evening. Almost
yeah.
every evening was like that. And yeah, if no one has gone to, who's listening, has not gone to Thailand for beaches, man, it is, it's on another level for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then after the islands, is that when you guys headed back?
Yeah, so we actually went back to Bangkok and we had a couple more days.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so we went straight, and luckily the weather was, I mean, the day we were leaving to get back on the ferry, it poured rain.
It was
so
the only day, the only day.
The only day, the whole trip it rained. So we got back to the ferry and then we went straight from the ferry to back to the airport, back to Bangkok. So that was a long day, but it was fun.
Nice. Okay.
We got our, we found a little place near our hotel that did our laundry. I mm-hmm. was like, you know, imagine if we took all of our laundry home fresh and clean. It was $2,
nice.
$2
yeah.
for all of our laundry to get clean, dried and folded. But we did get to hit up a night market before we had
good,
to head to the airport.
Good.
And it was on our list of things to do. So I'm yeah. so glad we went because, I mean, we tried everything there. It was so good. Yes, it was amazing.
How would you describe, a night market to someone who knows nothing about Thailand?
Oh my gosh, it's like...
Do it. Make it a priority.
Yeah.
Make it a priority,
it's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
it's almost like a ton of food trucks minus like the top of the food truck, because it's literally like a giant griddle or giant wok or, you know, giant open flame, and it's just tons of food and it's not all hot. I mean, they did have like some desserts and things like that, but just anything you can imagine on a skewer, scorpion, you name it.
What's the horseshoe crab? Not horseshoe. Is it, yeah, horseshoe crabs. Like it was crazy.
Everything.
One thing I will say about Thailand that I was a little misleading was everyone I read, all the videos I watched, all the research I did, everyone talked about how spicy the food was. I even learned how to say like no spice or low spice in Thai, and not once did I have to say it because the food was all like perfect. There was,
yeah.
And I don't do a lot of heavy spice, like spicy. Like everything that was cooked that we had was perfect. Nothing was too hot. Nothing was too spicy. Nothing made us sick. And that was the most impressive thing about the food, you know, the food markets. You go and you see like all this food left out in the open, but it's all so fresh and cooked so hot and it's right there in front of you. I mean, literally we tried everything. What was the fruit that we had that everyone said like it's so gross, but you have to try it?
Oh, durian.
Durian, yeah.
Yes. That wasn't bad. Like I wouldn't necessarily want to eat it again. But
oh,
I
think it's different per person because I thought yeah. it was horrible.
I thought it was good. I actually would. I would totally eat it
See?
Again. I totally
yeah,
would.
Some people eat it.
That's not how ripe ours was either. But yeah, it's like cilantro, right? You either love it or you hate it. So.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
we had to. You know, it's like one of those things
you have to try. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. I'm thinking back, and I'm glad you mentioned how the food didn't make you sick. I wrote a blog post about it, like how to avoid getting sick from street food and stuff. And there are a couple ways you do that, but for the most part. My wife and I agree 100%. It was the healthiest our gut systems, our GI tract has ever been in our
yes.
entire life was eating nothing but street food in Thailand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never got sick a single time, not a single stomach ache, never felt nauseous, and just like perfect working order of all my internal organs.
Yes.
You know? It's
yeah.
like, it was crazy.
It's funny you mentioned that because when we were flying home, we had a layover in Chicago and I had like two Chicago dogs. I was like, oh, I miss American food, blah, blah, blah. And it made me so sick. It made me so sick. It's like I had conditioned my body to eat like pretty healthy. I mean, even it's though healthy. It's street food, it's pretty healthy, it's all food. Healthy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we ate so healthy for 10 straight days. And then I had two massive Chicago dogs.
Which any other day. In a margarita, right?
Destroyed. I will say, though, like pretty much anytime we ever travel, I guess the walking and because of the food being as healthy as it is, we always like come back home a couple pounds lighter, which is an added bonus.
Yeah, actually, it's true. It's a really easy thing. If you just walk around, you go see the city, no matter where you're traveling, you can lose a few pounds no matter how much you're eating, you know, and especially if you're eating like the street food in Asia, because it's a lot of vegetables. It's a lot of like rice. It's a lot of noodles, things that are, you know, pretty decently low in calories unless you eat a huge portion. And plus, they actually like what's kind of cool over in Thailand for us Americans, the portion sizes are actually smaller. So if you order something, you don't. Yeah, actually, for me, I had a less tendency to overeat. So it's just
sure,
it was a plus.
It's like a comfortable amount every time. And I will say, because I didn't mention it, but the people in Thailand, I mean, it's literally nicknamed the land of smiles because everyone is so nice. Every person that we encountered was so nice. And it's like, they were so happy to see us. They were so thankful that we were there. It was just such a cool feeling to just always feel so welcomed everywhere we went. It was really cool.
So, okay. So I just want to know, so you guys went to Thailand, had this great trip, first time to Asia. What are some tips you'd have for others wanting to make that first trip and they're thinking about Thailand? What things should they know before they go?
Oh, you want to go first or you want to go first?
You go first.
Okay. So we've already hit on it a bunch of times, but don't be scared to eat. Obviously the food was all very good, fresh. Our first stint in Bangkok, I did make sure our hotels were kind of closer to temples just so we could experience that. And then on the way back was more like the food market scene. But I realized, you know, like there are different types of food markets and markets alone, night markets. They're all pretty similar, but I mean, I don't think going to the biggest one versus a medium-sized one or small one. Like I kept trying to find like what's the highest reviewed, highest rated night market. But honestly, and Jasmine, you can let me know what you think, but I think all of them were very unique in their own way, but I wouldn't say one was necessarily better than the other. They're all different experiences, but I don't think you should base your trip off like I have to go to this one market. Like there was the floating market I really wanted to go to, but it was like an hour and a half away from like actual Bangkok. So we didn't do that one, but I don't regret it because we got to experience other ones.
I agree.
What was the app that we used? It was like Uber, but it's
it was like Grab
or Bolt.
I think it was Grab.
Yeah.
That one was good. The taxis will pretend their meters are broken or cover the meters up, and they'll just ask you where to go and give you a set price. So that's one.
I have a big one.
Go ahead.
Okay, so we got married in October. So we were there like end of October, early November. It was so hot. Hot. I mean, I knew it was going to be hot, but I wasn't the humidity. So thankfully we kind of did some research and we did end up getting some Columbia, like, you know, the dry fit, you know, quick dry, whatever gear. So like less cotton, better, like things that won't really absorb a ton. They'll kind of just like keep it off of you and keep you dry. It was very hot though. I mean, I don't know how to French braid my hair, and my hair was very long when we went. So I had to pull up a picture of like French braids and went into like a little just place where this daughter and mother cut hair, like very small hole in the wall. And I showed them the picture and they're like, okay, we'll do our best. And they French braided my hair and I had to try to keep it like that as long as possible. So my hair was not touching me. It was so hot. But I think if you prepare for it, you know, you take dry fit clothes, plenty.
I'm pretty hot natured and I felt like it was fine, but I also had like the Under Armour. Columbia. Oh yeah.
You were better prepared than I was. He kept telling me Columbia. I'm like, whatever. You're just obsessed with Columbia.
But speaking of it, the attire though, one thing we were worried about was, you know, Jasmine keeping her like part of her neck and, you know, her body covered, right? Especially in the temples. And we were prepared for it, but no one ever said anything about it when she took it off, or no one was really strictly enforcing that. I think the only thing about temples is when you actually go inside the temples, just being barefoot. That was the only thing they were really strict about. So I don't know, that's more of them just becoming more modernized or if it's just something they ignored that day. So I don't feel like you have to go like in a full.
It's probably because they're so nice that they don't want to tell you otherwise.
Yeah, maybe.
But I would say, know what kind of climate you're getting into, and pack the right. And we packed light and it was perfect because we could keep our things with us all the time. We didn't have to worry about lost luggage. I know that's not everyone's, MO. A lot of people like to take multiple bags to take, whatever.
We did laundry there a few times. It was cheap and it
so
was
so cheap.
Good. It was so nice.
And they have everything there. I mean, they have drugstores where you can buy makeup and ibuprofen, like whatever you need. It's, I think people might think Thailand, okay, that's like very remote, third world, whatever. It's, they have everything that you need though,
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, and more, goodness, they have things I've never seen in America before when it comes to the technology and some of the things that they do. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like I even went to this movie theater. Like it was the best. It was like a lay down bed movie theater where where you had like a bed and stuff like that. You still watched a movie and you can, eat as much food as you want. They had a mini fridge next to you with like bottles of water, soda and beer. And it was all yours.
So, cool.
So like by at the end, we didn't drink it all. So we just took it with us because we paid for it,
Yeah.
But
that's so funny.
I've never seen that.
I think the currency too, do a little bit in the airport just to get what you need, but we went to a bank because I read this somewhere. It's like, just go to a bank and do your currency because the exchange rate is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah. I like, we did ATMs because there's just like a $2 fee or something like that for ATM fees for us at the time. So like doing research on currency is pretty important. So no matter where you go. So that's actually really good. Okay.
And just keep an eye on rainy season because we specifically planned there because it was not rainy season during the time of year we went. So that's just something I'd keep an eye on is when it's rainy season, when it's not rainy season.
Yeah. If you Google rainy season Bangkok, you'll see why. There's flooded streets sometimes. It gets crazy when it rains, like over there with all the tsunamis and stuff that they could get.
Yeah.
Well, if people want to follow you guys and stay connected with your adventures, what platforms are you guys most active on so they can follow you?
Yeah. So the proanos.com, proanos.com is where we mostly blog, but we are also on Instagram. It is _ travel and taste because our blog is called Travel and Taste with the Proanos. And same on Facebook, Travel and Taste.
Yeah. Our conversation just takes me back. It takes me back to that amazing time where my wife and I just spent a month in Thailand. All the amazing food, the night markets, goodness, just it's an experience that is unforgettable, that is delicious, and it can be a lot better than what you're expecting. Like Thailand has everything from the really cheap, delicious, like street food, the noodles, the rice dishes, the soups, anything you can possibly imagine is there. But they also have these really high-end restaurants and skyscrapers and super modern ways of transportation and all sorts of stuff like that. So it's such a fun city that so many people can understand when they're visiting Bangkok. And I don't know, like Thailand in general just has this really amazing hospitality. And I just love the food. It's so different. It's so delicious. And unfortunately, when I eat Thai food in America, of course, it's not the same, but it still brings me back to those amazing, amazing nights eating all that delicious food. So for the links on this episode of the things that we talked about and some of the links that Jasmine and Christopher want you guys to have, go to nomadicfoodist.com/theproanos. That's nomadicfoodist.com/theproanos for all those amazing resources from Christopher and Jasmine. And if you liked this episode, please hit the follow button so every week you get an amazing interview from awesome travelers all around the world. Thank you again for listening, and remember, eat with an adventurous heart no matter where you go.